This is a podcast from the Queen City Podcast Network.
Hello, everyone. My name is Logan, and that, of course, means you're listening to another episode of The Crown Cast, and I'm in a much better mood than I was this weekend. I watched Charlotte FC finally get trampled on at the bank. It was not particularly inspiring, and as a result, I do not have fantastic things to say about the team on this Wednesday podcast, but that may or may not be true for some fantastic people that I have with me. One of those fantastic people is Ewan. Hello, Ewan.
Unfortunately, this is what happens when I miss a Wednesday pod. This is the ensuing result. So I'll make sure that it doesn't happen again.
So what you're saying is everyone can blame you, Ewan. Is that right?
Exactly. This is what a leader does. They take the blame for this kind of thing, and I'm willing to put myself in the firing line. So I'm here now, and this weekend will be much better.
Well, also here to decide for himself whether or not he wants to be a leader in the firing line is Josh. Hello, Josh.
Hello, guys. I want to take a little bit of the blame as well. I believe on the last pod I said that we needed and should win this game, and then predicted like a shutout by us, multiple goals. So clearly hubris was the downfall.
Yeah, I remember you saying that we were going to win 10-0.
That's incorrect. It was 11-0.
Oh, 11. Yeah, fair enough. I think we can all say that as people who predicted Charlotte would do better in this game than they did, we all feel like we have a little bit of egg on our face. I do want to take a moment because due to the analytical nature of our podcast and what we do here, we are a little bit removed from some of the stuff that happens around the club. And one of the things I have not made a statement on yet, but I do believe deserves a statement, is obviously there was an incident dealing with supporters groups in the club where someone was injured. My statement and the official statement of the Crown Cast is going to be, Charlotte FC is a club that should be one with its fans, and that no matter what beef happens between us, violence should not be the answer. And I really do think it comes down to as simple as that, that at the end of the day, violence should not be the answer. And I hope that that is the message that resonates around. It's also my understanding that at this point in time, there has been a lot of beef between other podcasts and other shows, and we are not necessarily going to jump in and get involved in all of that stuff because we would much rather jump in and get involved in the tactics. I am going to bring a little bit of levity because the biggest news that has happened to Charlotte FC in the past week, Josh, I think you're going to appreciate this, is that it's my cat's birthday. Yeah. Happy birthday to Penelope.
And so we get how many points for that?
Infinite. Ewan, cool. Would you say infinite points for a beautiful birthday for Penelope is correct?
You know, I'm a cat person. I'm willing to agree to that 100%. This is fantastic news. I didn't even know about this.
Yeah, she's happy four birthday. Today.
She's amazing.
She's 4 years old and still a little demon of love. So
this is you putting a little bit of love out there after everything that's gone on. It's all been a little bit, you know, not harmonious. So this is exactly what we needed.
Yeah, in an effort for harmony, maybe we can ask everyone if they'd just be willing to post like happy birthday, Penelope, because that will make me super happy. And I hope in some weird twisted dimension, it will make Penelope super happy. I don't know. Josh, what do you think the odds are that if the people who listen to this post happy birthday, Penelope, she will feel the love?
How often do you allow her on Twitter and or Instagram?
We have some pretty strict parental controls for her. So, you know, Twitter can get nasty, but I let her on Instagram every now and then.
Yeah, well, I think maybe if you relax those, it'll be good for her.
Oh, fair enough. For like 48 hours, we're going to relax those just so she can get the love. Let's go ahead and talk about some things that we didn't love about Charlotte FC in the last game, the primary one of which is that we lost by 3 goals, which means we didn't get the 3 points. And all of the threes were, I have in my notes, bad. So I'm going to get on my box here. That's not true. Maybe people who listen to the show will feel that I get up on my soapbox too much. I feel like I'm not a soapbox person. But I feel like there was a real and honest domino effect at Charlotte FC in this last game. that showed us some of the limitations of the current squad and what is going on. Most people would be willing to look at you and say that Adilson Milanda is a very good defender, and his presence allowed us to plaster over some cracks and some challenges that Charlotte FC would have. And with him as a core piece of the team, we managed to create a defensive system that was relatively strong. I think our performances over the early part of the season have shown that with him in that line, we are capable of putting up defensive performances that are challenging for MLS attacks to get through. Love all that stuff. I think it's now clear to say that we have found that Adilson Milanda is the pillar of that defense. And when you take a pillar out of a structure, surprise, surprise, the whole thing falls down. None of that is going to be surprising. I think what was interesting to me is the way we moved to overcome that lack of a pillar in this game and the knock-on results it had up the pitch. So the first thing I'm going to point out was a note that I took that said we actually let Bill Tuiloma attempt to do slightly more Bill Tuiloma things when we moved into a position where Andrew Privet had the deepest lying position and was responsible for the run over the top and was that guy at the very back. We let Bill Tuiloma move up just a little bit, and it allowed him to do some of that intercepting stuff that he's actually quite good at when the ball's coming at him. I don't necessarily think it worked that well for Bill Tuiloma. I think instead of him having that more aggressive positioning regularly, he didn't know whether to be in that more aggressive position or be more defensively stable, and ended up kind of doing neither. What it also resulted in is Andrew Privet, who I will remind you last year is a defensive midfielder, not a center back, being responsible, being the guy who had to be the supporting pillar for the whole team. And the real trick, the real thing that stabbed this team, I think, is that it messed with our distances. It messed with the space between the players that they have come to trust and know. At the beginning of the season, Yere Urdanen and Andrew Privet looked really, really good. Why? They were next to each other. They were close to each other. They had each other as regular options. And Jabril Diani was getting over there and adding something new to the mix. When we dropped Andrew Privet further back, all of a sudden that ball to Privet was further away, and Privet's options were more limited going forward. It looked to me like the knock-on effect of the dominoes falling, of Andrew Privet's position moving, created distances for everyone around him, and that includes, but is not limited to, Yere Urdanen, Bill Tuiloma, Jabril Gianni, and Ashley Westwood, where everything just felt like they didn't really know how to make the next ball. And in that whole section of the field, and I have not included... Josh, help me. I've lost his name.
Jalen Lindsay.
Jalen, thank you. I've not included Jalen in this, and I will be asking the both of you for your opinions on him. I think we pulled Jalen Lindsay back into that center of the pitch to help cover for those other two. And I don't think it did him any favors either. So Charlotte had a hard time controlling the ball. They weren't able to play out of the press. Regularly, it looked like passes were going awry or straight to the feet of other people. Balls were under and over hit. It was all kind of a mess. And for me, it looked like the epicenter of that problem was the differences in spacing between that section of the field. So Ewan, I'm going to start with you. And I'm going to ask, one, did you see what I saw? If so, can you elaborate? And if not, why am I crazy?
What you start with is talking about, obviously, Adilson Milanda not being there, which is the thing which a lot of people have pointed to. Without him, it's five goals conceded in two games, both of those games being at home, which is below the standard which we've come to see. And the XG numbers, although they're overperforming XG numbers, our opposition, they're still higher than they had been with Milanda in the team. So the question is, okay, is that kind of it? Is that the issue? And then he comes back and he's the answer, or is there something else happening? And I think there's a little bit of both, as there often is. You talk about the distances between the players looking not as not being as trusted out of possession as it once was, in terms of, okay, I can be as far away from him and he can be as far away from that player because he's quick enough to get in there. And then I trust that if he actually does get past him, I have the right distance to get in there. All that kind of stuff, which is basically the essence of out of position play, is how much space can you afford in certain areas for it to be an advantage to you, as to where you're still sitting back enough, as to where you're not being overly aggressive, but you know that you can make attempts to win the ball and win duels, kind of finding that balance in between there. What happened in this game in particular, and this is the thing which will be interesting to see if this is the blueprint which other teams go off to beat us. There was a major emphasis in possession from Minnesota on dedicating players to the wide areas and those and overloading. And one of the things that you saw was that the fullbacks, or even it was basically wingbacks that we were playing against at times, were starting really high in possession on the opposite of the ball side. One of the things we've been really good at is our wingers tracking fullbacks when they've made runs. One thing that we haven't faced is fullbacks being high in the first place, so that you're not really tracking that run. You're in your area that you've taught to be in, kind of holding position to press against the ball going back into the defensive area, rather than, you know, following that run if it's made early and they're already in your territory if the ball's on the other side. What that was accompanied with was outside runs being made by inside midfield players, by standard wingers who were tucking inside, and then when the ball was played out to those fullbacks, getting around them. Because one, that puts a fullback in a situation where, do I stay with the ball? Do I go with him? And it puts a winger in a situation where I've been used to tracking a fullback and I know where he is. And now there's a guy coming from the inside who's coming around and I can't track him. The midfield isn't used to tracking him. And you saw that for their second goal, which I think was the pick of the bunch in terms of all of their goals. So what you say there in terms of picking out, there wasn't a trust between the players in terms of the spaces between them. I think that's absolutely right. The reason why I may not be as panicked about it yet as other people are is because this was the first time we saw it. And if we come out with a counter to it, what I started by saying is this might be the blueprint. If it is, we have time to find a counter to this and find our adjustment. And say, okay, we have Jibril Diani in this team. We have Ashley Westwood on the other side. Do we trust those guys to come around and trap those runs if they do come from inside to outside, rather than trusting our wingers to do it? Do we want our wingers to play deeper in the first instance? Those are the conversations that I assume will have already happened this week to adjust from this. So I'm not panicking about the fact that we looked as awful as we did out of possession yet. I'm not putting it all on Adilson Milanda being out of the team yet, because we have time to adjust.
But there is the option.
Exactly. There is the coming games where the blueprint to make chances against us has been laid, and now it's time to see how we adjust off of that.
So Ewan, one thing that I pointed out, is in my notes. So I pointed out to myself. Yeah, that's how that works. It all comes full circle in the end, I promise. One thing that I noted was that we have a tendency on Yede's side to ping the ball out of pressure. And ping the ball out of pressure is a strong term. But when Yede is running backwards, when he's got his eyes towards his own goal, he has a tendency to have Andrew Privet slide out to the left, and he'll drop a ball off to Privet. And once that happens, Ashley Westwood makes a run like clockwork, where he underlaps Jibril Diani and pushes himself up the field. Andrew Privet is really good at that little ball into that mobile Ashley Westwood, who then has 15, 20 yards of space to run into, and we know has that weapon of a foot, that passing range and ability. He can go over the top, he can split the ball, he can divide lines. In this particular game, that distance between them, there were three or four times where we just couldn't do that. That particular outplay that Ashley Westwood made that run, because Andrew Privet was not in line, the distance to him was too far for Yede, we were not able to make that play connect, and Yede Unanin is not going to be the guy who plays like a crazy, tricky inside right next to the player's boot pass into the midfield. That's not his game, right? So, one, did you see that combination? And then I'm probably going to go to Josh about how high we held our line.
Yeah, I'm that's one of our, that's an automatism we've seen throughout the year. I know exactly what you're talking about. As soon as you mentioned it, I could picture it in my head. The idea that the ball comes inside and then we get that run, and you can see it, and there's that example of it, but you also see it throughout this game and throughout all the games we've played so far. We're always trying to play those balls into the channels, either for Ashley Westwood to get onto, either for Enzo Capetti to chase, either for Enzo Capetti to try and win a knockdown for Ashley Westwood. It's always some combination of Enzo Capetti chasing the ball, Enzo Capetti being asked to hold the ball up, Enzo Capetti being asked to knock the ball down for Ashley Westwood, or the ball being driven into space for Ashley Westwood to get onto. That is some of our bread and butter stuff that we have in build-up versus playing the ball into the six, half turn, play it out wide, play it back, let's be patient, you know, that kind of stuff. Our build-up isn't patient at all. It's very direct. And in a game like this, when you're being pulled around in the way that we were, it's a little bit more difficult because if you're communicating on the pitch, you know, you're getting 10 minutes into a game and you make your adjustments. This is what we're seeing from them. This is what we weren't expecting. This is what we was expecting. When you get into that instance, there probably is a hesitancy to try and do that kind of thing because you don't want to make things as transitional because the numbers that they have committed are a little bit larger than you thought they were. And Dean Smith talks all the time about how we want to be as non-transitional as possible. But also the fact that, like you say, our defensive line was always adjusting to the fact that not only Adilson Milanda wasn't there, but because we had those runners coming in and it was making things difficult for our fullbacks. So yeah, there's a fair few reasons why we weren't sticking to what we've done throughout the year in terms of the build-up and the long balls that we've seen into those areas.
So Josh, I want to go to you at this one because I do think this is the highest defensive line we have tried to run all season. I do think that there are some potential reasons that we could be doing that for our attacking structure. But I think most of it was an attempt to cover our defensive weaknesses. If you looked at the way we built up, or if you looked at the way we were set up, Yede was allowed to go a little bit wider and a little bit higher, and Jalen Lindsey was really tucked in tight. And I personally think, and keep in mind, I have nothing other than my personal thought process for this, I personally think that Dean Smith took a look at our defense and he said, we are not going to win headers in the box, which, by the way, if you look at one of the later goals, I think he was right. We are not going to win the aerial threat, the aerial battle, and the aerial duels in our box. And Christian Kolina is not exactly a come out and dominate my space keeper. I would rather push the line up as high as I can and then use Jalen Lindsey as a ripcord, as an emergency parachute. Because you might say Jalen's not the best defender on planet Earth, but he is one of the fastest. He is very quick, and there were a couple of times that he ended up with the responsibility of that run-back duel that just became a foot race. What do you think about how we kept our line and how we handled our defensive plan?
Yeah, I don't know that in a vacuum I have too many issues with it, because as you say, you do have someone in Jalen who is pretty quick. I also think you look at Minnesota, and none of their players physically, I don't think, especially out wide, really got at us with speed necessarily. I felt like a lot of their attacks were a function of interplay and good passing that got them into space, not just a guy who was really fast, with maybe the exception of their striker, who I can't quite remember his name, but I thought he was kind of bullying both Tuiloma and Privet most of this game. So from that perspective, I think it makes sense where you say, let's try to keep a high line. We're not really worried about guys getting in behind us necessarily. If they do, we can get back. It didn't work. I will take a little bit of a victory lap in saying last pod, I pointed out Robin Lud, I think is the way you pronounce his name, as a guy to watch this game. And he got a goal and two assists in this game. And I thought he completely bossed this game. You know, we didn't have an answer for him, but again, when you look at him, he's not a quick, fast guy, right? The defensive line, when I look back at these goals, I also don't necessarily, especially the first two, I don't necessarily even see anything wrong with the idea in it. Like, we didn't get beat. The high line, I don't think cost us really with this, but I don't know that it actually did anything to help us, if that makes sense.
I mean, I have thoughts that the team got really separated You know, there were times that we had like a flat line of five attackers that weren't moving. They were all just sitting stationary in a line, and then 25 yards of green grass. And, well, you know, the five theoretical defenders back there, but Yere was off wide. One of the troubles that I have is I don't think Jabril Gianni sees when Ashley Westwood makes a bombing run forward. And credit to Chris, who pointed this out, Chris, on our last Patreon post-react pod. When Ashley Westwood makes that bombing run forward, which he does in the beginning of games now, he's been doing it regularly, I'm not sure Jabril Gianni does a very good job of acknowledging that he's not going to get back in his hole. That Ashley Westwood is not going to be back fast enough to cover that space. And I either need Jabril to cover that space faster, or I need Ashley Westwood not to bomb forward. Because I felt like there were a lot of times that both of them got caught quite high, and we had that line of attackers that was just five in a row, and there was all that space just sitting in the middle of our field that they could knock an easy ball into. And I think they took advantage of us in that position quite a few times. Any thoughts on that?
No, I think those are fair points. I think I'd probably have to go rewatch looking for that in particular. I will just say on the point of Diani, I thought that this was a poor game from him.
Yeah.
I thought that this game passed him by. I thought that I didn't really think in any facet he stood out defensively, breaking up play, passing, you know, making movements. That we talked a little bit about it last week, where there's this also this thing happening where on that left side, it feels like Kerwin is coming back to receive the ball, and then Diani is making a run into that wing space. And there's this really weird rotation that's going on that I don't know is quite working. And by I don't know is quite working, I mean I don't think it's working.
And then we're weirdly asking Yere to fill in that interior space on occasion, which isn't my favorite.
Yeah, we go back a couple games when Yere got the ball nicked off of him that led, I think, to a goal. And it was in one of those moves where Diani ends up out wide and Yere doesn't have a natural, I think, person to pass to. You know, we were very quick to, I think there was a lot of fans who were quick to sort of anoint Diani because I think his first impressions were good. But I think we're starting to see maybe some of the areas that he's going to have to improve on quickly for us. Because again, I don't think that this was a good game, and I was very happy actually to see Bronico come on for him.
So I want to jump to you in here because you and I have lined up as a question for you. That is, how did you see Jabril Diani's performance? Part of it for me, and I have seen this with a lot of good players who are made to look quite poor because they do not understand their role or because their role includes them just having to put out too many fires. And my first instinct with Gianni was he looks like a guy who has to put out too many fires and he's not being capable of doing any of it. Do you feel like this is a limitation of Gianni? Do you feel like he's been given too much? How did you see it?
He, in this game, was way too keen to kind of make driving runs. That was something that was very obvious. Something that got pointed out by Dean Smith in the post-match. Like he's just way too keen to drive into the space. And we talked about this off the back of the game a couple of weeks ago where we'd conceded on the counter. I believe it was the goal against New England where I kind of messed up explaining it by saying that he was in the box when actually he had been involved in the interplay and then had made a driving run and abandoned his rest defense responsibilities. And that has happened again in the Minnesota game where he just keeps driving out of that position and abandoning those responsibilities. And like I say, Dean Smith points that out again. But when we signed him, I had said that this is kind of something that he does. Like people were thinking that this was going to be a standard six. And I was saying like a lot of his best stuff is driving forward into space. And that's one of his tendencies. So you hear Dean Smith talk about that. You see the evidence of the fact that he's been doing this for a little while, and it's the old phrase, you're either coaching something or you're allowing it to happen. So this not being the first instance of this does make you think, like, is he clear of his responsibilities? And it also makes you think it's like the if he is, but you know the tendencies of the player, it's like the Subway meme. It's like, oh, this food sucks. It's like you made it. Like if Dean Smith is saying, "Oh, this is terrible from this play," he keeps driving forward into this space. He's abandoning his responsibility. You watched him. You've watched him do it for ages. The club watched him do it in the tape that he was putting out beforehand. Like this is kind of who he is. And if he carries on doing it and you don't like it, then it's hard to
change his position or change the player. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Like, and that isn't the easiest thing because I know that we've been dealing with a few injuries. It wouldn't be a like for like replacement to put someone like Arfield in. But Bronico is now available. And we've spoken about Bronico before, saying like he is always going to play more football than people would think in theory. Because throughout the season, you're going to go through periods where this guy's not doing his responsibility properly. This guy isn't playing well. And every single time he's going to fit in there, he's going to fit in there, he's going to fit in there. The fact that Dean Smith was so direct in calling him out, I'm not 100% on Bronico's fitness and whether he would be able to start the next game. I think if he is fully fit to start the next game, I think he will start the next game because that was a very direct calling out. And it was a very direct calling out of something that he's been doing throughout his time so far and has cost us before. So I wouldn't be surprised if it's something that he's been told in private. He's been told in private. He's been backed in the media. He's been told in private. And then seeing it again today, he was like, I'm just going to say it in my press conference because I've told him so much behind closed doors. Maybe this will get through to him better. And that could well be accompanied with a Bronico coming in. So you asked me how I thought he played, and I'm answering with the fact that I think Bronico could start the next game. that kind of says it all. I just don't think he's not fulfilling his responsibility properly. That much is clear. And the fact that he's not fulfilling his responsibility properly takes away what the best quality of his game should be, which is stopping defensive transitional moments from even materializing. But he's so far out of position, he's not even there to stop them.
Yeah, let Josh want in on this.
Yeah, I actually have a question for both of you, because the past couple games, a question that I've had in my mind is, do Diani and Westwood work? I often look for partnerships, right? Center back, midfield. And I look at these two guys and I go, if Diani has the energy, if we could put his energy back into Westwood. But I'm looking at the balance of these two guys and I'm really starting to get concerned about whether they work, which is a problem because Diani is your midfield signing of the offseason and Westwood is your captain. So which one of them is leaving the starting?
I can answer the first part of that. I cannot answer the second part. The answer is no. They are both players who have significant challenges in the midfield, who are better at playing eight, and they both like making attacking bombing runs. Neither one of them, I think, is a true standard six, and they're both being asked to cover that role. One of them has, I think, technical qualities that need improvement, and another one has just physical age challenges that don't allow him to cover for the other. So my answer is no, it's not a balanced midfield that I would draw up on paper. Ewan?
We touched on it a little bit two or three weeks ago where we kind of pointed out that it didn't really work. Because when you play with a bit more of a staggered midfield where there's like a six and an eight and then a 10, as people would call it, you can have the different qualities in there because a fullback tucks in usually with those teams and you have the midfield base worked that way. And, we've seen it with other managers, like we don't need to go into it now. Like the way that works, if you have a staggered midfield where the roles are a bit different, this team plays a pretty clear 4-2-3-1. And it's, I think when you play a 4-2-3-1 with the two holding midfielders, they need to be a bit more similar. Their skill sets need to be a bit more balanced. You can't have those two guys playing in there together. It's like, right, if I give it to this guy, he can do this. If I give it to this guy, he can do this. Neither of them are perfect sixes. I agree with that 100%. I still think that there are little bits of differences in terms of what they can do and where they want to receive the ball. And that's just, it's asking a lot of the rest of the team to kind of identify that and know, oh, he wants it here, he wants it there. It makes it a little bit more of a tough match between the two. And it makes it even worse that when you think about, okay, what are they actually similar at? Well, both of them want to drive forward with the ball. Oh, great. There's our defensive midfield pairing, and but they both want to drive forward a little bit more. Again, gets back to that point of neither of these are a perfect six, which then gets back to, we do have not a perfect six, but a perfect six prospect in what I watched of him in Nikola Petkovic. And what are we doing with him?
We're from turning him into an attacking
eight. We're putting him further up the field. And I know that we are a team that doesn't do, I said it earlier, we're not a team that does much standard build-up. We don't pass it between the centre-backs and the defensive midfield and wait for the press to come and play around them and get it into the upper midfield. And we don't build up play that way. I get that. But at the same time, and it was shown a little bit in this game, when you go 1-0 down, and you can't counter-press in the way that you want to, and you can't just play the long ball in the way that you want to against a team that is wanting to force the issue a little bit more. If a team goes 1-0 up, they're happy to sit back a little bit more, be a little bit patient, and then your counter-pressing stuff doesn't really work. And then we're left kind of, we're like a pitcher who can only throw fastballs, can't hit the zone, but they're not swinging. So when we get into that situation, we don't really have a lot about us. So it's great to not have build-up when the game state is even, when it's not even and we need to build a little bit more and play a little bit more standard football, we don't have the midfield for it. So that kind of makes that balance even worse and makes that midfield pairing even work even less than it already doesn't.
So what we have effectively said so far in this episode, just so we can do a quick summary here to talk about how optimistic we're all feeling, is that if we lose Adilson Milanda, our defensive back line falls into complete and total ruin. That if Yere Yrjönen is not supported in exactly the way he feels like, he becomes completely out of position and incapable of hitting a pass. That we've taken our fastest attacking fullback in Jalen Lindsay and we've used him to defend the ball over the top. That our defensive midfielders do not work together as a pair and we can't get rid of either one of them. And that literally no one in our team can defend. Josh, is that all about right?
You forgot about how well our attacking midfielder is playing.
Oh, right. Our attacking midfielder who injured himself in warm-up and wasn't able to continue on with the game, so we had to rotate him.
I was talking about the other one.
Oh, the other one. The one who we pulled out at 50 minutes because he's either clearly not doing what the coach wants or doesn't have the ability to run long enough to make it count. Oh, Ewan, you'll appreciate this one. I also forgot that we have a litany of center forwards who aren't scoring.
Our out of possession is also worse because we're trying to fit a batter in.
So this has accidentally become the Doomcast.
Yeah, that one, this wasn't meant to be. I didn't want it to be this depressing.
Charlotte FC Doomcast. If you came here to feel really bad about the potential of this team, we got you. Remember, when everything is at its darkest, it's still my cat's birthday. So there you go. We obviously have not been, we didn't play great in this one, but there are some potential reasons for that. Some of which Josh has been very kind to lay out in great detail. Josh, there is a whole stat block here of very interesting things. You want to go through it with us?
Yeah. So I was just sort of looking at, we're at 9 games and this is not a perfect sort of separation, but I kind of looked at where we were the first 5 games and where we've been the past 4 games, and the trends, again, to go into Doomcast, aren't great. I don't want to throw out too many numbers, but just suffice it to say that our XG and our XGA or expected goals allowed are going in the wrong directions. And it's a point that I've been making now for a few weeks. We are simply just not creating enough on offense. Some things that I looked at for the past few games. In against Minnesota, Minnesota had 11 key passes to our 5. Minnesota had 9 passes into the penalty area to our 2. Minnesota had 4 crosses into the penalty area to our 0. You go back to Toronto. Toronto had 8 key passes to our 7. They had 11 passes into the penalty to our 4. 1 cross to our 0. You go back to New England. 9 key passes to 5. 9 passes into the penalty to our 5. 4 crosses into the penalty to our 1. All of these numbers, by the way, are from FBref. Whether these are 100% accurate, how they're defining a cross into the penalty, that's not really the point. The point is that by a lot of metrics, we simply are not getting the ball into dangerous areas. And now it's starting to show with our XG numbers. Because over the past 4 games,
We only have 4.8 XG, and 2.3 of that came from the Cincinnati game. If you're looking at our last three, we're only at 0.83 XG per game. Meanwhile, when you look at what people are doing against us, they're getting opportunities, right? And yes, the injuries to Milando, we can't discount that. You can't discount a little bit of luck here or there. But what I'm continuously coming back to in my mind is, for me, as kind of I think Ewan has been getting at as well, is this team kind of plays at it on a razor thin margin where things need to be really sort of going right. We need to have those moments happen for us. And when they don't, we're not showing the ability to create and come back from that. And until some of these partnerships get ironed out, and I still think we have time to right this ship, so to speak. But until that happens, again, it's something that I said a couple weeks ago. We can get mad at these missed opportunities, but we're not making good opportunities. These are bad opportunities that we're making, and then we're missing bad opportunities, which is kind of to be expected. We have to become more dangerous. I'm not sure how we do that. Maybe that is retweaking the midfield. Maybe that's just Abada settling in. Maybe that is putting Pat in over Enzo to start the game. All I know is that the teams that we've been putting out, it's not working. And I really hope that, I'm sure Dean Smith is a much smarter football brain than I am. So if I'm seeing these issues, I'm sure he is. But I really do want to see some changes being made to this team, and especially in that midfield and that front three, to see if we can't find a better balance. There are a few players, Westwood, Abada, Vargas, who I think are going to start and who should probably start regardless. But I think kind of outside of those three for that front six, I think it's time to start playing around with some things.
So I'm gonna throw something at you and see how wild of a reaction I get back, which is my measure for really too many things. If I had to put someone in this team at this point in time, especially given the challenges that we've now seen with the loss of Adilson Milando, I know Andrew Privet has done a very good job and he's been deputized to do a very good job. But I look at the way the team is balanced and I cannot get out of my head that if we had a really stop all center back there on that left side, we could do so many different things. Most notably, we could have games where if we do have the pressure going forward, we could stick with Yere, and Yere could do a little bit more of that connecting and overlapping running stuff. And if we had games where we were under more threat on that side, we could move Andrew Privet out to that backside. Andrew Privet could then do the role where he moves into the midfield where he used to play. And I think he is capable of doing roughly the same defensive job that we would expect from Yere on that left. But it would allow us to shift into a back three that forces Jaylen or Nathan Byrne, I mean, for me, it would be Jaylen, up closer to Liel Abada, where instead of us having to tilt the field to the left, we can open up a larger space on the left for Kerwin Vargas, and we can push more people around Liel Abada who can make more danger. As far as the center forward position goes, from my perspective, I don't think we have it right, but I do think we have options. I personally don't necessarily now think that Enzo Capetti is the right one moving forward, but I'm also not saying we should throw him out the window. That is not to be taken as an over-exaggeration. I think Pat is lacking in some things, but I think Pat can develop. I also think we have Yuri Tavarsh, who we have yet to see in that center forward role. There are a lot of places this team can greatly benefit from, but from its base is where everything is built. And I just can't get out of my head the idea that a really strong left center back who can partner Adilson Milando, who can be the rock if Adilson's not there, would just allow us to make this whole team sit on a stable platform.
For me, I think that feels a little harsh for Privet. I think he started this season really, really well, and I think him and Milando look really good together. I think that has more merit if Milando is missing more time. I do. For me, it's the midfield. That's where my primary focus is, to be honest with you. And the change that I would like to see is one that Ewan keeps talking about, and I think it's also one of the least likely, which is Petkovic coming into this team to partner with Westwood. Yes. And then, I mean, I'm not quite sure. Brecht has been very underwhelming. I would probably at this time, if you want to get really crazy, I kind of wouldn't mind seeing Brent Bronico in that more advanced role with Westwood and Petkovic. Again, do I think that's likely? No. But I think Andrew Privet over the latter half of last year and the beginning of this year, I think he's earned enough leash where I want to continue to see him. I think he deserves that a little bit, because again, I think the last couple games without Milanda, I think last week you asked, at what point do we view him as a center back and not a central midfielder turned center back? I think the absence of Milanda has shown he's still not there yet. And so I don't think it's fair to remove him from that unless Milanda's missing a lot of time.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the ultimate statement there is unless Milanda's missing a lot of time, because at some point in time, you either get the job done or you don't, right?
Sure.
And when it comes to getting the job done or not, Ewan, you have picked out a very interesting stat that since we're currently having the Crowncast Doomcast, I think is relevant. Do you want to talk to us about where we are in the points race?
Yeah, I pointed this out a couple days ago, just again, and it's caveated with everything that you caveat these kind of things with when you're at this stage of the season, where 25-30% into the season, but just looking at the points total we have and projecting it out, because when we did the preview podcast of the season, I made it very clear that I'd kind of be judging this team by its points total, and I laid out the parameters of this is what I think would be a fairly underwhelming season, this bracket points would be C-plus type season, and if we got to this level of points, then I'd be happy. So I always kind of keep tabs on that, regardless of whether the sample size is good at that point or whether it's a little bit weak, just to see how we're pacing and how we're going. So looking at it after the last game and projecting it out and rounding up, we're currently on a 42-point pace for the entire season. Last season, we finished, it's down here as 42, but I think it may have been 43.
I think it was 42 the first season. It was 43 the second season.
Yeah.
We finished one point better.
Yeah, we're pacing for 42 points this season. 43 points is what we finished on last season. And in the inaugural season, we finished on 42. So, in short, despite the optimism of people like Dean Smith and a bit of optimism in certain players and how this season maybe feels a little bit different in terms of the defensive security that we've seen, purely on a points-wise perspective, and again, short sample size, everything like that, we are kind of the same team. Now, you say, you know, to continue the Doomcast and things like that. That may be the case for a lot of people who had very high hopes for us this season. I know when we did that preview pod, we predicted us to finish ninth. We both had a prediction that we'd finish ninth in the conference. And 42 points is ninth in the conference type, is a ninth in the conference type points tally. Then you bring in the...
I can jump in and tell you we are currently ninth in the conference, so...
Well, there you go, exactly. We're right where we would roughly be on pace and where we would project to be roughly towards the end of the season. Yeah, that's... it's good that they have a league table for us to keep track of this stuff. It's always good to keep that in mind. Compare that to the national perspective, which had us finishing 12th, 13th, 14th, even 15th, when you see that, you know, that MLS poll where they get all the pundits and they all predict. I don't think any of them had us anywhere higher than about the 11th, finishing 11th in the conference. So if you take it from that context, then it's been a good start to the season. And if I would say, has this been a good start to the season? Has it been a bad start in everything put together? I think the points total that we've put together in these games, considering how late our business started in the summer, I'm not panicking at our points total. But in the same vein, I'm not someone who thought that we were going to cruise to a playoff finish. And I respect the people who do think that we are going to you know, romp the league and finish in a certain points total. Because as a fan, you deserve to be as optimistic as possible, because, you know, that's the point of being a fan, to enjoy it and be as optimistic as possible and get behind your team. But from my perspective of looking at this, I don't see our 42-point pace at this stage and feel too doom and gloom about it. I do think that we have created a decent base with a fairly decent identity of ourselves, which is now getting tested by bringing new players in and the fact that we're coming off our worst result of the season and probably worst performance of the season to pair with that. But I do think overall, I'm kind of okay with what's happened so far, and I'm okay with that points pace.
So I want to jump to Josh on this one, because when you make note of that points pace, I think it's important to, especially on a small sample size, small being, you know, what, we're 25% of the way through the season-ish?
25, 30, within that range, yeah.
You have to think about who you have played, because we're not at the point where we would have played everybody once. We're certainly not at the point where we would have played everybody twice. So thus far, we have played NYC. We've played Vancouver and Toronto under relatively difficult conditions of having to play both teams from Canada away in a row. We have played Nashville. We've played Columbus. We've played Cincinnati. We've played New England. New England is in there. We have to acknowledge that New England exists.
I mean, Nashville is currently 14th in the East, so...
That's quiet, Josh. we've played Toronto again, and then we played Minnesota. Yeah. Most of those teams you would put as pretty good teams on paper, mm-hmm. except apparently Nashville and New England, who are both absolute garbage, and I can't believe they bothered to step on an MLS pitch. Josh, can you give me like a dumbed down number? Like, if 10 is we had the hardest possible schedule to this point, and 0 is we've been playing literal children who have never played football, to this point, how hard has this schedule been?
Oof. For me, it's probably been about a 6.5, 7. I don't think it's been an easy schedule, but, you know, we haven't played some of these really big guns. I mean, we haven't played Miami yet. We haven't played RBNY yet. Like, mm-hmm. there's some, and I will also say we played NYCFC the first weekend, and we'll get onto them obviously in our preview. They've been playing better, right? So like, I don't think that's the same NYCFC team that we played at the beginning of the year. I think I'm with you in where I think the points total is mostly fair. And I think that we've been tested, but it's not been a brutal test.
Yeah, I think that's probably a fair way to say it. And under those conditions, I think I personally would have liked to see a few more points. I think if we were at 45, I would have been a little bit more comfortable. But at the same time, that point total does not, if we were at 40, if we were at a pace for 45. If we were at 45 points right now, gentlemen, we would be doing real good. We'd be breaking some laws good.
Because your cat gave us all those points.
Yes, Penelope. Every happy birthday Penelope text I receive is 3 points for Charlotte FC.
We actually already have 45 points in cat years / cat points. So we're doing pretty well.
The title of this podcast is going to be 45 cat points. Now, let's go ahead and move on just a little bit, because we are going to be playing NYCFC again. Josh, you've given us the transition. Now tell us why we're definitely going to get 3 points from New York.
Well, let's first start with New York is actually now ahead of us in the table. They are currently sitting 8th. As I alluded to a minute ago, they are playing better. Their first 5 games were horrible. They started with 1 win and 4 losses. And since then, they've drawn 2 and 1-2. And against good teams, Miami, Atlanta, not New England, and DC. A month ago, I know that there were a lot of Charlotte fans out there who were basically penciling this in as 3 points because they got off to such a rough start. And again, it's when you come back to that sample size thing, because I think that this is probably more where New York is, sort of a mid-table Eastern Conference team. And I think that they're showing that and playing better right now. For me, there's 3 players that I'm going to be keeping an eye out on. The first is probably their most well-known, Santiago Rodriguez. He's a 24-year-old. He's their leading goal scorer right now four goals, one assist. He's a really, really good passer, more of an attacking midfielder who will get into the box and be very dangerous. He's someone who's had a couple down years, but is really, really talented. Their goalkeeper is also a bit of an unknown. This is his first year starting, but so far the numbers have been really, really good. He's only allowing one goal per 90 minutes. And then when you look at his PSXG plus or minus, it's at plus three on the year. Interesting to note, and I'll get on this a little bit later as well, is that he does not launch the ball. New York likes to pass out from the back, and it shows in his numbers. He's in the 83rd percentile for passes attempted, and he's in the 9th percentile for launch percentage. So that kind of gives you a hint at where, at how NYC is going to try to build up and play, is that they're not going to lob the ball deep. They're going to try to play out from the back. The last guy who I want to highlight is Julian Fernandez, or Julian Fernandez probably is how you more appropriately say it. He's a 20-year-old U22 initiative player. He was bought last year, made 9 appearances for them. He's not really a starter, or hasn't been a starter, at least in the last 4 games. But he already has 2 goals on the season. He has an assist. He has made an appearance in all of their games. And he's a really exciting young prospect. He's played for the Argentinian, I think, U23s or U20s at one of the more recent World Cups. Really, really exciting young player who I imagine we'll see coming off the bench and could give us some issues later in the game when there are some tired legs out there, especially if New York is looking for a goal.
Yeah. So the question I will always ask you, Josh, is who is scoring our goals and how are they doing it?
So for me, I don't know who is scoring our goals. The way I would like us to try to create some goals, though, is by having a really, I guess, targeted press on them. As I said, I think that they're going to play out from the back. They have it one center back in particular who makes a lot of passes and is very good at that, and that's Thiago Martinez. He's 88th in passes attempted, 92nd in pass percentage. The rest of their back line are not bad passers, but they either don't do it a lot or they don't have a high percentage. And so I would be trying to ensure that if the ball is going out to one of those back line members, that it's not Martins. With that said, what you're going to see is also they have two midfielders because they play a 4-2-3-1 as well, mostly. And they have two sixes who, like Ewan wants, are pretty similar to each other in Keaton Parks and James Sands. Both of them are pretty good passers, and Sands in particular will drop back a lot to receive that ball off the back line and off the goalkeeper to move it forward. So for me, I would look at a way to try to keep the ball off of those good passers and put it into their fullbacks who are a little less calm on the ball, put it onto their other center back who's a little less adept at passing out from the back, similar to way teams have sometimes played us in the past. And see if we can't maybe force a turnover from them in a good position and try to hit them maybe with a quick break. That's what I'd be looking to do.
All right. Now that we have the information, Ewan, it is your duty and I assume your honor to tell us what you think the score is going to be for this one.
New York have scored first in all of their last 3 games. We might be in trouble if that happens again, just based off what we've talked about before. I think we'll get a point for this game. I think we'll draw it 1-1. Both of these teams don't average a lot of goals in the games. New York, I think, have had 18 goals happen in their 9 games so far. We've had 20 goals happen in our 9 games so far. Pretty low totals for both teams, so I think it's better to go on the kind of low-scoring side generally, even though our last 2 games have been a bit more higher scoring, at least with us conceding a fair amount of goals. So yeah, I'll go with 1-1, and this is the forbidden prediction, but if Capetti starts, I think he'll score.
Oh, wow. The absolute insanity. People are going to clip that.
The DP number 9 score.
I'm going to go ahead so Josh can have the tough one of picking another set of numbers. Or having worse to agree with one of us. Let's.
All right.
I think that the question to me in this game is, this is the first time we have seen a team under Dean Smith at Charlotte kind of get punched in the jaw. I think this is the first time that the defense has just shattered. The midfield was just not functional. We got clocked, and in the past, Charlotte has not recovered from that particularly well. It has been slow, steady recovery, not bounce-back recovery for Charlotte. And so my thought process is, do I feel like this is a team that Charlotte has beaten? I think they've beaten NYCFC every single time we've played them. So are the team going into this, and is Dean Smith going to be able to get them in a place of, this is going to be a bounce back, get right? And I'm going to go for the benefit of the doubt, and I'm going to say yes, that maybe Adilson Milanda comes back in, we get a bit of our stability back, and we win this 1-0. Josh, are you as cautiously optimistic as me?
No. I'm going to say that I think we're going to lose this game 3-1. I actually kind of think New York is just playing pretty well, and I think they have a lot of confidence. I will caveat this and say, though, if Adilson Milanda does start, if he plays, if he starts, we lose 2-1.
And I will caveat this and say, if Adilson Milanda does not start, we lose 2-0. So
Doomcast.
Doomcast. on this episode of the Doomcast, as ever, thank you to Ewan.
Yep, always happy to bring the positivity.
Thank you, Josh.
Thank you, guys. Sorry for the negativity.
And as ever, thank you to you, dear listener. If you've decided to spend your time with us, we love you. Thank you so much. We love this game, and we love talking about it, and we love doing it all right next to you and alongside of you all. So whatever part you play in this community, we appreciate it. We will talk to you again after we go and get our next 3 points from NYCFC. Goodbye.
QueenCityPodcastNetwork.com.